You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody. We don't do introductions here, Bill. I noticed the other shows, they do these. I'm Bob Wright. We don't do that. So I don't know if we should, but I feel like people. We just start going with the hello, Bill. What do you think?
If you don't know what the DMZ is, and you don't know who Matt Lewis is, and you know who Bill Scherer is, you know, maybe this isn't the place for you. Maybe you don't belong in this club. If I have to start holding people's hands and introducing myself every single time and spoon feed you like some coddled little snowflake, I mean, the next thing you know, Republicans are going to be providing health care to everybody. And where does it end? Where does it stop?
Yeah, I think it's tough but fair. This is tough love. And I think maybe this is a good time to tell the other shows to join in. You don't need, you know, this. Go watch, you know, watch something else if you need to have your hand held. But you can Google who I am if you don't know. And you should probably know. Google that. You can Google who you are. So let's just keep it the way it is. I don't think we should change. Settle. Okay. I'm glad we got that taken care of.
You know, I feel guilty. I'm so used to looking at Blogging Heads on the website because we've been here for so long. I've yet to be released from my Blogging Heads prison. I haven't gotten accustomed to.
I tried to quit once. I tried to quit once, Bill. They wouldn't let me.
They keep pulling you back in.
I couldn't. Yet. There we go with the Godfather references. Okay.
But I hadn't taken the step of subscribing to Blogging Heads on my podcast app on my iPhone, which you can do. You can subscribe to all the Blogging Heads episodes or you can subscribe to individual shows. I've been listening to more podcasts lately because I have a Amazon Echo and it makes it a little bit easier for me to do that while I'm washing dishes and cooking dinner and whatnot. And the one catch with that is I have a hard time remembering all the podcasts that are available to me, and I want to make sure I'm listening to a podcast that's fresh, that's not a week old. So I need to have them all subscribed on my phone so I can look at that and see what's out there. And now that I've subscribed to Blogging Heads. I can see very easily what's fresh and rich and light in myself on a regular basis.
Yeah, I don't know why anybody would watch this, to be honest. The suits and big Blogging Heads hate it when I say that. I feel like this is best consumed audibly, and I do because I run and I metro and I walk and I listen, and that's how I learn a lot. Now I do have to say an apology here. I hope that my lighting and my audio is okay. I'm at a hotel in New York, and so who knows, you know. But anyway.
Is this your way to participate in the Day Without a Woman strike? Have you fled Washington, D.C. and are striking from your pundit duties?
I have to say, this will be controversial. I have not noticed a difference in my life today so far. Everybody, and I. This is a compliment, not a criticism.
Your circles may not be affected by this.
Well, no. I mean, like, my kids' schools, luckily, are both open. I went to Starbucks, and my normal people were there. It hasn't impacted me, and I think that's a good thing. This is not a criticism of saying that, like, criticizing women. I think this is a compliment. Like, don't – the striking thing is stupid. It really is, Bill. You know that.
I do not know
the
that.
Best case scenario. Well, here's my theory on it. Okay, so right now I'm going to restaurants and Starbucks, and there's no disruption at all, which is great because women are there, and they're doing a great job. But that means that shows that this day isn't effective. But if the day had been effective, like if I wanted to go to a restaurant and the service was bad, or slow, or the restaurant was closed, or if my kids' schools, like a lot of schools were closed, like if that happened, my response wouldn't be, gee, we need to start treating women better. My response would be, I'm never going back to that restaurant again. And if I had an employee, man, woman, regardless, whatever, that like up and said, I'm not coming in today because of some political protest. I don't care if it's Ronald Reagan's birthday, February 6th. We should all observe that by working. If they didn't show up, I don't know what I would do. I would not be happy about that. So anyway, that's where I stand on this.
You might not be getting the impetus of the strike. I'm just going to put it out
probably
there.
Probably am not. Explain this to me, though.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole today.
Well, in our pre-discussion, we said we weren't going to do it, and now you've riled me up. And like now I'm on the line here. Not at my house, but possibly in other places.
But I take it more seriously that you're in New York for CNN purposes?
That's right. I'm actually very close to the Time Warner Center, and I'm getting ready to go in to the Daily Beast offices, which are also in New York, the big home branch in a little bit. And you know what it's like on the road, man. Yeah, maybe my lighting will be better or worse. It's you know, this isn't like the perfect, you know, environment. But that's what we do. See, we show up and work even when it's challenging. And that's why I'm taping here from, you can see the little right behind me here, a little cocktail bar, whatever it is. Little airplane bottles. Yeah, I've not had any yet today. So kudos to me.
Let it not be said that we don't sacrifice for our fans.
But as soon as this taping is over, it's a game on.
Well, so we're taping on Wednesday. It's been 2 days since the House Republicans have unveiled their replacement for the Affordable Care Act, the American Health Care Act, which perhaps notably shares two words with the original Affordable Care Act. And it's not been the smoothest rollout, something that you and I have talked about on this show before weeks ago, that replacing doing anything on health care is politically fraught. And then you fleshed out your thoughts after canvassing the conservative wonk world for a very prescient Daily Beast column, which you got some guff for, saying that maybe Republicans should just leave this alone, because whatever you do on this, you're bound to make somebody upset, and it's bound to be a political loser. And here we are, 48 hours in, and many commentators are suggesting this might not even pass the House, let alone the Senate, because the Republican caucus is so divided, and there's no way you're going to get any Democratic help for this.
Yeah, no, it's really weird. I think it's the worst rollout I've ever seen of something this big. You know, I was thinking back, like, Bush's Social Security reform thing crashed and burned, but I don't think it got off to that bad of a start. Immigration reform got off to a good start. I mean, even on the right, you know, you had people like Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh sort of going along with it a little bit, or like, well, we like Rubio and he's selling it. And I mean, over time, it just dragged on, and eventually it just turned on them. But it didn't start off this is like probably the worst I've seen anything get off to a start. And I wonder, like, you know, obviously they're trying to push it through very quickly. I wonder, though, maybe they should have like done a little like laying the groundwork first, like with
Over the past 7 years, they could have done a little bit of groundwork?
Well, no, I'm not talking about the obvious point that they don't have a real replacement plan that would work. What I'm talking about is the public relations aspect of, like, having conservative groups and opinion leaders sort of ready to promote this and to support it. Like, having that greasing the skid so that the day it comes out, Heritage Action supports it, the Club for Growth supports it, Eric Erickson writes something good about it. I have the sense that they really didn't go to like conservative meetings or try to sell it to conservative groups in advance, and they just dropped it. Now, we knew something was coming, from news reports. But that's my sense, and I wonder about the wisdom of the way that it went out. And I would say this, I don't know how long Donald Trump backs this. Like, at some point, I would not be surprised if Trump, you know, distances himself from this. We'll see if it gets better.
Well, I have an alternative theory on the rollout. I mean, it's not like these people don't know how to do a good rollout. I mean, look, the Neil Gorsuch nomination had a fantastic rollout. I mean, not only did you have all the conservatives,
also a good product too.
Well, I think that's sort of that's kind of where I'm going here.
Okay.
I mean, you had an op-ed in the New York Times by Obama's Solicitor General within minutes of the nomination happening, saying this guy's fantastic. I mean, that's a good rollout. Those bases were covered. I don't think it's correct that there were no meetings with conservatives. There were discussions within the House caucus for weeks here, but clearly the feedback from the hard right was, we don't like this. We don't want to do this. And the signal from the House leadership was, okay, we're not gonna get perfect consensus up front, but at the same time, they're pressuring us to have something specific. Remember, you go back a couple months ago, the Republican leadership was repeal and delay. Let's not have a plan. And then the hard right said, you damn well better have a plan. And they said, okay, here's a plan. Nah, this plan is terrible. So their logic seems to be either, well, we're just going to have to force the issue, put this on the floor, and dare the hard right to take responsibility for killing Obamacare repeal. Or a slightly different variation of that is, we know this whole thing is a giant political disaster. There's no way out. So let's accelerate this process, have it explode as quickly as we can, and get it off the table so we can move on to something else that has more political prospects.
Are you saying, I just want to be clear about the last part, are you saying there's a chance that they want this to fail? They tried it, it failed, and then we just get, you know, Donald Trump can say, hey, we tried Obamacare repeal, it couldn't work, so let's focus on other stuff now.
I don't want to be so cynical as to think Paul Ryan doesn't want to repeal Obamacare. I'm sure he does. But I think he also knows that it's very difficult to do, many people have commented, you and others, you know what conservatives really believe deep down is free market, and free market it's not politically tenable to just jump to full free market once Obamacare is baked in the cake, and because you're inevitably going to be taking health insurance away from somebody. And some people might get a better deal in the free market, and some people most certainly will not. And that kind of Darwinist approach to healthcare is going to be a political disaster. No one wants to bite that bullet. So knowing that Ryan can't do that, and that something like this is the best that he can do, he may be fully aware that he's not going to be able to get this thing passed, and so he might as well have it fail. I mean, it's like John Boehner and Ted Cruz's shutdown ploy, where Boehner's like, hey, they're not listening to me. I'm going to let them walk into the brick wall, and they can, once they figure it out, they can pull the plug. So I think this might be roughly similar to that philosophy.
Yeah, it would be very interesting, but it's weird. Like, this isn't Donald Trump's brand. You know, Donald Trump is daddy. He's a big government populist. And I don't think his, like, repealing Obamacare was part of his promise, but I don't think it's any fundamental part of it. And so if this thing ends up disastrous and it ends up really marring Donald Trump's legacy. It would be ironic because this is more like a Ted Cruz thing probably than a Donald Trump thing, don't you think?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Well, like, yes, Donald Trump did campaign on repealing Obamacare, but it's not really on brand for him. I mean, he's a big government guy. He wants to take care of everybody. He wants healthcare to be, he wants everyone to have, you know, to have healthcare. And this plan is more like what you would have expected if, like, well, it depends who you are. I mean, conservatives, obviously, it's Obamacare light in many ways. But I guess my point is the way it's going to be portrayed by Democrats is more in keeping with, like, Ted Cruz's brand than Donald Trump's brand. I just wonder how long he's going to stick with something that looks like it's failing, that doesn't even really represent who he is anyway. Like, I don't think Trump really, you know, cares about Obamacare that much. Maybe it's just me.
I mean, Trump has been all over the map on healthcare. He was explicitly single payer when he ran in 2000 briefly. He defended single payer systems in the presidential primary debates. And he's always talked about how, you know, government has to take care of people. They can't, that it is necessary, that we have to have heart and we can't let people go without health care. So it's certainly not in his gut to be, you know, Ayn Rand about it. But at the same time, additionally, I think he is perfectly capable of saying things he doesn't believe and walking away from them and moving on to the next issue. I mean, it's very common to say he's just doing what he said he would do, and that overlooks the things that he said he would do that he is not doing. He hasn't pulled out of the Iran deal. He hasn't labeled China a currency manipulator. He hasn't pulled out of the Paris climate deal. He is capable of picking and choosing what campaign promises he wants to stick with. And I don't want to go so far as to assume that Donald Trump is actually fleshed out things in his mind. I think in many cases he certainly has not. But there was a Washington Post piece by a Hungarian columnist talking about their Trump-like prime minister there, who said, you know, populists govern by swapping issues, not resolving them. It would be perfectly in character to have this fight, have it blow up, blame somebody else, and move on to the next thing. And dare his supporters to care. I mean, if they wouldn't care if he shot somebody at Fifth Avenue, would they care if he didn't actually solve the Obamacare repeal? That's totally in character. It's what I expect will probably happen at the end of the day. You know, the one thing that would be embarrassing about it is that not just that they all promised that this would happen and they couldn't do it, but that Trump sold himself as Mr. Art of the Deal. And this is his first test to see if he can actually make a deal with something as bulky and complicated and multifaceted as a legislature, which he's never actually had to do. And this would be evidence that he actually does know what he's doing on that score.
Yeah, it'll be very, I don't really see how this, you know, passes. I mean, it'd be very hard because you've got there's really no constituency for this in Congress except people who are like partisans for Trump, or loyalists for Trump, apologists for Trump. But if you're like a conservative, a hardcore conservative, you're not going to like this because it's Obamacare light. But then if you're a moderate Republican or a Republican governor, you may not like this because of the rollback of the Medicaid expansion. And if you're a partisan Democrat, why on earth would you help Republicans at all? You know, you'll just sort of reflexively oppose it. If you're, you know, a principled liberal, you'd probably be against it because it probably will end up covering fewer people. I mean, maybe Joe Manchin votes, you know, with Trump or something. But, you know, it's hard to see how this, I mean, if it passes, it's going to be by the skin of its teeth, right? I mean, it's hard to see how this, you know, it would be a nail biter at best.
Well, and, you know, and passing it comes with its own risk because many have said, left, right, and center, that it's just a bad plan. That it's it's solving a problem that isn't actually a problem. I mean, if you might think there are problems with Obamacare, but those problems aren't really being addressed by this Rube Goldberg scheme. So you might be better off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and one of the most obvious problems is just sustainability. If you are going to promise sick people that they can get coverage, that there will, you know, that if you have a pre-existing condition, you can, you know, that you'll be covered. If you do that, but you don't have the mandate, then it would seem like that's a problem. Right? I mean, the mandate forces, which I actually oppose, but the mandate forces young, healthy people to sign up and get in the system. So if you take that side away, but you still force, so you're not forcing people to sign up anymore. You're not forcing healthy people to sign up, but you are forcing insurance companies to insure sick people. That seems like a problem, logically, right?
Well, I mean, the mandate was designed to solve a particular problem. We want to make sure everybody is covered and do it in a cost-effective way. And there is a population of people who are predominantly young and healthy who don't think it is necessary to buy health insurance and don't want to spend money on it. And of course you can say, well, then they shouldn't be forced to. However, we all know they will eventually consume healthcare. It's not like healthcare is a commodity that you will always forego unless you have some specific religious objection. Everyone's going to go to the doctor or go to the hospital someday. So that's why it was a Heritage Foundation plan, a Mitt Romney plan to say, this is not the big government fist force you to something you don't want to do. This is ensuring that everybody takes personal responsibility for their inevitable healthcare consumption. So it was designed to solve that problem. You might not like that solution, but you at least have to acknowledge that it was a solution for a definable problem. You know, so what is the problem that this bill wants to solve? Well, we lack freedom because of the mandate. Fine, give us more freedom, but don't tell me that you're also solving the problem of universal coverage or reducing costs, because that's not what this does.
Well, there are, you know, there's some things built in that could try to make up some of that money. For example, I think under Obamacare, you could only charge old people three times as much as you charge young people. And now you can charge them five times as much. Also, there's the, I guess one of the real catches is, so if there's not a mandate, and basically they've gotten rid of the premium support, and they're having these tax rebates, which serves to both incentivize signing up for coverage, as well as provide a means for doing that. So those things could help a little bit, but it's hard to imagine how this would work out. And I wonder, like, the whole, you know, dog that caught the car thing. I mean, like, let's say somehow this does pass into law. That could be the worst possible thing for Republicans. Like this.
Yeah.
If this thing really does pass, now again, it's going into committee for markup, like as we tape this, it's still possible that something could, I'm sure many things will change, but something important could change in the bills, in the plan. But essentially, like, if this thing ever became law, I mean, it could almost be like when that executive order about immigration went out, you know, because there could be pandemonium.
I just don't feel like, you know, conservatives, I feel, pride themselves on being rational. You know, we're not emotionally driven like those bleeding heart liberals who do all these feel good things like go on protest or pass legislation with nice sounding titles that don't actually do what they say they're going to do. You know, we're better than that. But the impetus for this whole project is almost totally emotional. I mean, I would say it had some philosophical underpinnings, except the product is not philosophically consistent. The impetus is just...
No, you're right, Bill. If the replacement was a much more pure free market replacement, then it would be easier to say that it's philosophical. But it's like we're swapping one like government run, you know, I mean, the Republican plan, you know, it's Obamacare light, right? That's what everybody's calling it. But you're right. It's not, I mean, it's not like there's enough clear enough distinction to say like, this is our pure one and that one's the bad one.
And so the only reason to do it is because they're mad at Obama still. They're mad that Obama passed the big thing and got credit for it. And they want to take that away from him. They ran on it for so many years and feel a certain obligation to follow through, but they're not being clinical and rational and clear-eyed about what it is, what policy they want to accomplish. So I think that's a disease that's rife throughout the Republican Party.
Yeah.
At the same time,
well, they spent years and years promising to repeal it. So that's you cannot underestimate the political importance of fulfilling that promise. I mean, that's why the main reason why they won the majority in 2010. So it's fulfilling a promise. I also agree with you. I think this has taken on a symbolic importance that actually transcends, even though healthcare is like 20% of the economy. It is a big, big deal. But I think that symbolically, it's even more important than it's warranted to be. But I would also say, I think there are some major problems, of course, with Obamacare, major problems. I mean, I think like premiums are up, you know, people with ridiculously high deductibles. It may be that the best way to do it is to accept that you're not going to have a pure free market system, you know, for better or worse. And the architecture is probably, like, uprooting that architecture is very dangerous and could have all sorts of unintended consequences. Maybe the conservative move is to basically find ways to fix the problems that are still there, like that the premiums are too high, that deductibles are too, you know. But that's not, you know, we're sort of weighing all the politics and policy and
well, almost all the solutions are going to involve spending money or government regulation or both. if your belief is we need to provide affordable coverage to everybody, and we want to use the power of government to do that, you are now playing on the field of, you know, providing government policies. If your belief is government's got no business in this project, and whatever happens, that's a different philosophy. But you got Republicans sort of saying both things, and it doesn't add up.
I think there are tweaks. I mean, that can be done. Things like means testing, things like having options for catastrophic coverage that people can opt into. I mean, I'm sure that there are things around the edges that can make this a lot, that can make our healthcare better, obviously. But this plan is just really, I don't think there's a single person that's not a Trump loyalist that, you know, or a Ryan loyalist that supports this. There's no constituency for this plan.
And so on top of all, so you have this clash between ideological belief and I think emotion-driven politics within the Republican Party. And then layered on top of that is Trump himself, who has shown no interest in governing, in traditional governing. It's certainly the case that the Bill Clinton administration micromanaged the healthcare process, took too much power away from Congress, and had that all blow up in his face because Congress didn't have proper buy-in into what was being proposed. Obama went the other way, more successfully, let Congress work its will, and was very flexible on what the on the specifics, but certainly was involved. He didn't just play golf every weekend in Florida. He was involved in the process and was directly involved in negotiations, was involved with corporate stakeholders in the insurance industry and the drug industry, and, you know, played a guiding role. Trump seems to be totally deferring to Ryan, at least for now, even though Ryan doesn't appear to have his ducks lined up within his own caucus. If Trump was actually going to be Mr. Art of the Deal, and this is what I find a little surprising about Trump, he came in as someone who was not a partisan, who formally identified as a Democrat, who's given to both parties, who doesn't have to be tied to the Hastert rule. Seeing that the Republican Party is not easily unified, that's an opportunity for an engaged president to say, hey, let's try to cobble a different kind of coalition here and use, you know, what popularity I have with my base to bring along people who might not otherwise be interested in a bipartisan coalition. But he just doesn't seem to care about what legislating involves. So you're stuck with, these from Republicans who, you know, complained for 6 years that Obamacare was passed on a partisan basis. Now you have folks who can't even get their own partisan ducks lined up, have no interest in bipartisan negotiation, and a president who's completely out to lunch. The whole thing is just a disaster from top to bottom.
I think there's, I guess, two possible scenarios. One is maybe this is how Trump takes out, or Steve Bannon takes out Paul Ryan, or at least neutralizes him. You know, we're seeing like Breitbart is calling this Ryan Care, Drudge is calling it Ryan Care. They're not tying Trump to it. So that's the sort of, I guess, cynical view of it. The other view, though, is, I mean, like, if you're Trump, you know, if you want to delegate, you would think that of all the things a president has to do, that you could delegate this to Price and Ryan, and that they would be very competent and good at it, right? I mean, these are ostensibly smart people who thoroughly are policy wonks and thoroughly understand, you know, the budget process. And you would think that, like, if there was one thing you could take off your plate and you could sort of delegate, that this would be a good one to do. You know, the Republicans have had, as you've said, like 6 years to come up with replacement plans. Mike Pence can be the liaison, work with Price and Ryan, let them handle it, and just you do the sales job, let them worry about the numbers and the policy. That would be a perfectly rational thing that you might do. So it's hard to blame Trump for that.
That Price and Ryan can't get their act together?
Yeah. Like, don't you think that of all the things a president needs to do, you're going to, you know, you're always going to have to outsource some stuff. You're going to have to, you're going to have other people who are managing projects. You're going to have to delegate responsibilities. And wouldn't you think that this would be one area where it would make perfectly rational sense to say, if you're Donald Trump, obviously not a policy wonk, to say, let's have, you know, Ryan and Price and Pence, let's, you know, take the lead on this and let's just do what they say. It's going to, you know, the Speaker of the House obviously knows what's going to sell in his chamber, how to wrangle votes and count votes in his chamber much better than I do. He knows healthcare policy and budget policy better than I do. Like, that, I'm not, so my point is, like, I don't think this is an irresponsible thing for Donald Trump to do, to delegate that to them. It seems perfectly plausible and rational that you would do that. Now, sadly, it just so happens to be that they don't have they don't have a plan.
Well, they don't have a good plan. Deference to Congress is a wise way to legislate as a general rule, and I think Obama did that better than Clinton did, which is why Obamacare passed and Hillary Care didn't. But let's not whitewash our brains here. Donald Trump ran for president on the premise that he didn't have to be the most experienced in government policy. He was the most brilliant negotiator that's ever been provided to us by God. He's Mr. Art of the Deal. He was going to get, we're going to win so much we would be bored, and he was just going to simply get people in a room and come out with the biggest, best, most wonderful healthcare plan, not to mention every other piece of legislation on the planet. That was his promise in his campaign that he would do things like that. And so he doesn't get to say now, hey, I gave Ryan and Price this portfolio and they screwed it up. That's not what his campaign was premised on.
No, but he can still do it. No, I get where you're coming from, but watch him. Watch him do it and get away with it.
He is a master blame shifter. I don't dispute that at all. But if you are Mr. Master Negotiator, again, I totally get the defer to Congress point. But here you are. It is painfully evident that the Republican caucus is not capable of unifying around this sort of proposition. So the smart negotiator would say, okay, I need to bring some other people in the room here to see how do I get to 50% plus one of the Congress. And Ryan is not capable of doing that. Price is not capable of doing that. The only person that would be capable of doing that is Donald Trump if he could get out of the partisan box, which this is a guy who ran as a different kind of Republican, who wasn't a traditional Republican, who wasn't even traditionally conservative. And yet he is completely, I mean, beyond delegating, he is just handing over the reins to the most partisan people in Washington, calling it a day and playing a lot of golf. There's nothing in this that was promised by him in the campaign.
I agree. It should be easy for him to walk away based on that. What I'm curious about is, if Trump wants to, he could decide, this is the bill. We have to do it now because of the timing of reconciliation or whatever. This has to pass, and therefore I am more popular in Mark Meadows' district than Mark Meadows is. I am more popular in Texas than Ted Cruz, whatever it is, or than Rand Paul in Kentucky, and he could stump. He could use social media, he could use mass media, and he could stump in the states and lean on these members. And, you know, allegedly he's got some sort of outside Obama for America or whatever. I mean, I don't think they're doing anything, but, you know, he's got some sort of political mechanism. Like, if Trump wanted to, he could presumably use his popularity with the base to lean on these conservatives and say, we're going to run ads saying you voted against repealing Obamacare. Is that what you want? If you don't vote for this, I'm going to go to your state and I'm going to say that you are against repealing Obamacare because you're voting against it. Do you want to do that? He could play that kind of hardball. It would be a ton of effort and work. Or he could, I guess option two, is just sort of stay hands off and let this thing collapse and blame Ryan and try to diminish Ryan. Or he could walk away altogether from this and wash his hands of it and hang everybody else out to dry. I don't know, Bill, of those three options, which do you think is the most likely that he'll do?
I think they will eventually walk away. I think they'll let it die as quiet a death as they can make it die. And then Trump will get involved in 10 other distractions and hope you forget about it.
All it takes is one tweet, man. Never mind 10 distractions.
Right.
One tweet could keep us busy.
And look, and so long as the economy is in relatively decent shape, and things sort of stay on its status quo path, I think you could get away with that. Now, if, as Republicans claim, not to say it's true, but if premiums doubled after doing nothing, then I think they would have a harder time walking away. If as Democrats say, look, we're not in a death spiral here, people. We had there's been some hiccups along the way, but by and large, this is generally a program in decent shape. You just need some fine tuning. If your day-to-day life is not terribly affected by status quo, you can get away with walking away and having status quo. I think the same is true.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the best possible scenario? He walks away, and if nothing bad happens, then nothing bad happens on his watch. And he walks away, and if something bad happens, you blame Obamacare. Because right.
It's hard to blame Obamacare now. They've dipped their toe in the pool. So,
well, they haven't changed anything. And especially if Trump throws other people under the bus. Like, I tried to pass it. Those Republicans couldn't get their act together. And this
you're not just blaming Obamacare at that point. You're blaming congressional Republicans. I mean, there's no way Republicans can escape all blame if you actually ended up in a death spiral type of situation.
I'm thinking, how does Trump? I'm being Trump now. It's how does Trump escape blame and blame others? I think it's possible.
I would have expected Trump to be fighting more with Republicans than we have seen. I mean, he's done little things here and there with like. Individual people who have peaked him, but he hasn't gotten to a big war with Republicans yet. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. I would have thought he's just so attracted to conflict and drama that he'd eventually get around to having a big fight with them about something, and this is as good an issue as any to do that. But so much of what he has done has been just straight up partisanship that I'm less confident that he is. He's capable of doing that. I think there is a part of him that actually doesn't like the confrontation with people who are that immediate to him.
No, I think that's totally possible. I think he's probably more likely to do it on Twitter or TV than he is in person, for one thing. So what do you say, Bill? Call it a show, or
this will be a super duper healthcare special. Which I think totally appropriate considering the magnitude of the situation, and we'll get some other topics next week. We're not bereft of topics these days.
No, and I do want to encourage people to go read that Daily Beast piece that I wrote back in January, which I think really nailed this problem. And there was some pushback from some conservatives, and basically, it has played out exactly as I thought it would. I started off trying to write a piece that was like, this is how Republicans can fix Obamacare. And after days of talking to healthcare experts, my takeaway was, this can't happen. Like, this is a disaster waiting to happen. And then that's how it's looks like I was onto something, you could say sadly or unfortunately. But go read that piece.
Absolutely. So till next week, this has been the DMZ. We'll catch you here later next week. Anything you have to plug?
Listen to us on, if you search Blogging Heads, you can listen to the podcast of this. There's a DMZ Show podcast specifically. And you follow us on Twitter at DMZ Show. And that is all.
All righty. Till next week. Take care.
All right. See you, Bill.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.